D.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Sarah Taboda, and I represent Ms. Miljanovic in this matter. I am a Rule 9 licensed legal intern. My supervisor, Richard Lesich, is seated right behind me from the Washington Appellate Project, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Very well.
Okay. So this Court should reverse the unsupported finding in favor of PD's dependency because the State failed to demonstrate that Ms. Miljanovic was either intentionally or negligently culpable for her daughter's cerebral conditions. The State's theory behind PD's cerebral conditions rested on the controversial theory of shaken baby syndrome and circumstantial evidence that linked Ms. Miljanovic to her daughter's various head trauma. While this syndrome was, for the most part, commonly accepted in the 20th century and in the early part of the 21st century, many doctors, engineers, and members of the legal field are now of the opinion that the triad of symptoms associated with this disorder, and the triad of symptoms are the retinal hemorrhages, subdural hematomas, and cerebral swelling, are not the byproduct of infant shaking.
Did the doctors testify that the subdural hematomas were necessarily the product of shaking?
No. They said that it could also be the byproduct of falls. It could also be a byproduct from birth. Birth is a really traumatic experience, and babies' heads sometimes get wedged during delivery.
So if we were to disregard the retinal hemorrhages mm-hmm. and just look at the trauma that the child suffered that causes subdural hematomas, then the issue about the shaken baby syndrome is not really a pertinent issue.
Right. Well, I think that there was a finding that Dr. Deem stated that the hemorrhages, well, like you said, were from infant shaking, and then there was another doctor who stated that this was some sort of whiplash trauma because of the lack of external trauma, so I would liken that to some sort of shaking, some sort of deceleration, acceleration sort of event. Neurological studies have found that a child subject to the rotational forces called for in abusive head trauma or shaken baby syndrome would certainly experience neck or spinal injuries or even bruises.
And this was the testimony from Dr. Yasinski?
Yes, this was his testimony.
Okay, and the trial court found him not to be credible.
That is correct.
On what basis would we review that testimony then?
Well, I think that it's just something to bring into, it's something to consider along with the fact that many of the state's own witnesses couldn't conclusively date the chronic hematoma and the acute hematoma. So as far as dating the chronic hematoma is concerned, Dr. Fahmy could not date PD's chronic hematoma. She stated that the chronic hematoma could date back from birth. And Dr. McCary, who is also one of the state's own witnesses and who is a pediatric neurologist, also agreed that the blood could be present from birth. He could only date the chronic hematoma as being older than 2 weeks. He agrees that there's no way of knowing how long the chronic blood was present. And this is significant because if we can't date the chronic blood, then the acute blood is less significant because having a chronic hematoma makes you more susceptible to having an acute hematoma. And so an infant who has this chronic blood in their brain could simply develop an acute hematoma from a small fall. It could even just be a rebleed from an inaccurate healing mechanism. I also would like to add that countries throughout this country, in states like Texas, Illinois, and Wisconsin, are overturning convictions based on shaken baby syndrome and beliefs that the justice system and medical experts once had. And notably, I'd like to add that this court in Division II granted collateral relief to a defendant because, and I quote, the scientific explanations that were offered against the defendant are no longer generally accepted in the medical community. And I would also like to add that the state found that PD's failure to thrive diagnosis was the mother's fault. And I would like to add that PD, before she was admitted to the hospital, she had a urinary tract infection. She was diagnosed with emesis, which is vomiting. She had a fever. She had all of these cerebral conditions. She was undergoing a lot of pain, and she was just a difficult infant to feed. I think it's unreasonable for the court to say that the mother was intentionally withholding food from her daughter when her daughter was experiencing all these symptoms. It's completely logical that a child like her would be extremely hard to feed. And I also would like to add that...
Wasn't she also not attentive to getting the child to medical care when she displayed symptoms?
So Ms. Maljanovic took her daughter to the emergency room on February 27th because she was fussy and irritable, couldn't really hold a bottle down, was vomiting. And they gave her antibiotics, and she was on her way. But in the 5 days in between her going to the hospital the first time and the second time, she just noticed that her daughter was more lethargic than normal.
Wasn't there a recommendation, though, that when she left the emergency room that she see her family doctor like the next day?
Correct. So this was for the UTI. I believe that was on the 27th, and I believe that was a Friday. And then on the 20, I believe Ms. Maljanovic testified that she was unaware of any clinics being open the next day. And I think when it comes down to it, she saw that her daughter was doing worse. She said that she took her daughter to the hospital on March 4th because during that time, that was when she stopped responding. That was when she started to really deteriorate at that point. And the mother did the appropriate thing and took her daughter to the hospital.
But the failure to thrive and the failure to gain weight is something that occurs over an extended period of time, not over 5 days between hospital visits.
Well, I'd like to note that on the 27th, no one really made any comment about her weight. She was also taken to the doctor in January. No one made any comment about her weight either. She really just stopped growing, I would say, in the later part of February. She was consistently vomiting, so I think it does make sense that she sort of had this diagnosis. So, again, I'd like to also add that Ms. Maljanovic has experience with children. She has been a loving caregiver for her brothers as she was growing up, and I see them running out of time. So,
don't panic because the clock's going down.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, my name is Kelly Kaler on behalf of the department, and the department's asking this court to affirm the dependency finding as to this child, PD.
Would you mind pulling the microphone just a little closer? You're a little soft-spoken. Thank you.
The department and the mother are in agreement that PD was not diagnosed with shaken baby syndrome. The undisputed findings in this case established that PD was diagnosed with non-accidental head trauma. So opposing counsel has chosen to discuss shaken baby syndrome for the sole purpose of discrediting that diagnosis.
But wasn't the testimony though as to the retinal hemorrhaging that was caused by shaking?
Dr. Deem did testify that the retinal hemorrhaging would have been caused by shaking. That's correct. So it was interesting when one looks at the findings of fact. There were some of the doctors the trial court found to be more persuasive than others. Mm. Dr. Deem's testimony was the trial court noted that was the opinion of Dr. Deem, but what the trial court truly found to be persuasive was the consistency and the time frame of all of the doctors that testified from Mary Bridges Hospital, and also the consistency of the team in determining that this was an inflicted head trauma. So that's an uncontested finding it was finding of fact. S is uncontested. It says the team of physicians at Mary Bridge Hospital from multiple medical specialists, including neurology, neurosurgery, trauma, ophthalmology, and physical abuse team, followed physical examinations and various diagnostic testing, all conclude that PD suffered from brain injuries, and the primary diagnosis for PD was non-accidental head trauma. So that's an uncontested finding, and that's really what the trial court relied upon, and another finding in finding fact HH, which also is unchallenged, the trial court states that that was what was found to be persuasive to the trial court was the team of physicians at Mary Bridge. Dr. Deem, who is the ophthalmologist, was part of that team. So they all agreed that this was abusive head trauma. The testimony from the mother's expert witness, Dr. Usinki, he admitted that he had actually been censored by the American Association of Neurological Surgeons for providing biased testimony. And the trial court found Dr. Usinski not to be credible. So this credibility determination that's been made by the trial court must be accepted on review. This court also should not engage in reweighing of the evidence that was produced during this trial. This was an 8-day trial. There were 8 medical doctors who testified. And the appellant court should place strong reliance on the trial court's determination as to the course of action that will best be served by the child's best interest. And that's the CB case at 61 Washington App 280 that made that statement. So in terms of Farrow, that case is distinguishable for the reason that I've just discussed, which is that Farrow was a case that addressed the shaken baby syndrome. This is not a case that involves a shaken baby syndrome. Also, there was a lower standard of proof. Farrow involved a criminal case. There was, in this case, unlike in Farrow, there was really no dispute over the timing of the injuries. There was a consensus among the medical doctors who testified for the state. If we disregard Dr. Usinski's testimony, then the only testimony that's left about the timing of the injuries were those from Mary Bridges Hospital. And they were consistent in the time frame, establishing a time frame that the child was injured during a time when the mother had exclusive care of the child. So although the precise time and date weren't determined, the consensus from the doctors was that these were injuries that occurred within 10 days of the child's admission to Mary Bridges Hospital on March 4th of 2015. So that would have been a time frame when the child was in the exclusive control of the mother. Also, unlike the Farrow case, the doctors considered a number of possible scenarios which might have caused P's injuries. This outdated triad of symptoms for the shaken baby syndrome was not used. PD did have retinal hemorrhages. She had chronic and acute subdural hematomas. She also had kidney infection, dehydration, failure to thrive, anemia, seizures, intracranial hemorrhage, and she also had this restricted diffusion in her brain, which indicated a lack of oxygen to her brain tissue. So the white matter diffusion, Dr. Duralde testified that was most likely caused by a shearing force. So when a child sustains a head injury, the child's head can twist and whip back and forth, and that creates shearing forces in the child's brain. And Dr. Duralde, who is the medical director of child abuse intervention at the Mary Bridges Hospital, testified that the restricted white diffusion was caused by some sort of acceleration and deceleration injury. So although Mother's Counsel tried to pin Dr. Duralde down to get her to testify that this had been exclusively caused by shaking, Dr. Duralde refused to go down that path. She testified it was some sort of acceleration, deceleration injury. The team of physicians were, as I indicated earlier, they were all in agreement that this was caused by abusive head trauma. And they ruled out accidental or natural causes. They ruled out blunt trauma. They ruled out birth trauma. They ruled out infection, and they ruled out a bleeding disorder. So, unlike in Farrow, where the doctors testified that the cause of the child's injury was shaking of the baby, Dr. Duralde testified, "I don't know if it was a shearing force or if she got whacked against the wall. I just know this whole picture together. She had an event of head injury, and it was acute. It happened a few days before she was in the hospital." So regarding chronic blood from birth, this was ruled out specifically by the team of doctors from Mary Bridge. Dr. Duralde testified that studies show that birth trauma definitely resolves by 3 months of age. And Petey was 6 months of age when she went to the hospital on March 4th. So there was substantial evidence to support the B finding of abuse of a child in this case. There was also findings to support a neglect determination, and there was that involved not only the mother's failure to take the child to the hospital as she was recommended to do after she went to the hospital for the UTI infection on the 27th of February, but also there was this larger picture involving chronic neglect. Not only the failure to thrive diagnosis, which was given, and the fact that the child had only gained approximately 1 pound in the 3 months in the mother's care, but also the failure to take the child into medical appointments for vaccinations, for well-child checkups, and her inaction during that five period of days after she had been told to go to the doctor the next day on the 27th. She waits 5 days to bring the child in until the 4th of March, and by that time, the child's condition was really quite dire. Petey was dehydrated, lethargic, unresponsive. So in terms of the ongoing chronic neglect, there was quite a bit of testimony about the fact that Petey's mother was not a supportive parental presence for her child. So Petey was being denied her basic right to nurturing while in the mother's care. Dr. Girauda testified that when she went to examine Petey, she saw that that Petey had a bottle propped in her mouth and that Petey was sucking on the bottle. So this is a child in the hospital for chronic malnourishment, and the mother has bottle propped the bottle, and Petey's trying to get nourishment. And during this time frame, Dr. Girauda observed that the mother was across the room, on the other side of the room, sitting in a chair. So this was an example of Petey's mother not being a supportive parental presence for her child. Pediatricians do recommend against bottle propping. The other doctors noticed that the mother was not a supportive parental presence. She was encouraged by the nurses to feed Petey, but she didn't seem to be involved with Petey while Petey was in the hospital. The mother admitted she used television to calm Petey when Petey would cry. The father testified that the mother placed Petey in front of the television set most of the time. So these were all indications of ongoing chronic neglect in addition to the medical neglect of the child. So there was a basis for the finding of dependency on the basis of neglect. And all of those reasons that would form the basis for neglect and abuse also supported the C finding of dependency. So all of those bases were supported by the evidence. We asked the court to affirm the dependency determination. Thank you.
So I would just like to mention that a lot of what opposing counsel mentioned was that the team of physicians unanimously agreed about the timeline of Petey's injuries, and that's just not correct. Again, I would like to reaffirm that Dr. Macari, who is a witness that the state found or that the trial court found credible, agreed that the blood could be present from birth. You can only date the chronic blood at being older than 2 weeks old. Also, Dr. Fahmy testified that the acute hematoma is neither indicative of new trauma or new abuse. Dr. Grondin, who is a pediatric neurosurgeon, explained that chronic blood makes you more susceptible to acute blood. So we didn't really have a consensus as far as the timeline is concerned. A lot of people...
So there was conflicting evidence, and we rely on the trial court to resolve those issues, and as long as there's substantial evidence to support the conclusions, then we will not disturb that on appeal. Why is there not substantial evidence to support the trial court's conclusion?
Because there were no external injuries on PD, plus the abusive head trauma diagnosis has been disputed in the 21st century, and also because there was plenty of testimony at trial concerning the mother's character, concerning how she was a loving and caring caregiver for her two brothers as they were growing up. Her brothers are now 4 and 7. She also took care of her grandmother when she was ailing of cancer. there really wasn't any character evidence to sort of show that she was the kind of mother that would do something like this to her daughter. I'd also like to add that there was some talk about Ms. Lajanovic's flat affect at the trial, and the mother is a DV survivor. She has a restraining order against her PD's father, and one of the doctors, one of the state's own witnesses, said that she presented as someone with post-traumatic stress disorder, and I don't think it's fair for the state to sort of believe that the mother doesn't care about her daughter because she's manifesting manifesting behaviors that are a byproduct of the violence that she endured with her husband, or her ex-husband now. So I would ask this court to reverse the finding in favor of dependency and return PD to her mother. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.